East is a genesis, house made of dawn, where streaked clouds in lavender, red, orange brush the world's edge, where the dense circle begins. Doors of domed wigwams face morning. From pipestone tobacco smokes, waifs a straighted light washes rivers with green. Deep in the forest, fiddleheads unfold. Green of new leaf, the bright glossy hair rises through red clay, lighting the world. South is the summer's white heat without shade. Yellowing grasses bend with wind's breath as bulrushes lean over bodies of lovers. Clothes peeled like fruit skins, the limp sleeves of August forgotten. Hydrangeas blossom in blues, whites, beyond tongues of tiger lilies flames. Among bee balm, hummingbirds hover. Every live thing grows, sinking roots deeper into the black rock. West is a space of thought, sparse land with cliffs brushed magenta and gold. Leaves slowly turn to sunset hues as women gather chokeberries. The elder men crafting gourd rattles, singing thin clouds into lightning for corn. We, who cannot stay here forever, read the cliff's face where our ancestors wrote to us, pictures in ochre. Beyond a vast darkness, they are waiting for us. North is a country of reflected light, shadows like wolves. The curved fang takes moose by its haunches, spatters scarlet fire onto ice. Footprints recede into tundra. Aurora borealis, a dance among spirits, new snow piled on boughs, ribs gnawed with scrimshod grooves. Death-grown startled horizons grow still. Bones trace edges of ptarmigan caribou. Whiteout, a porcelain bear waits beside the world's ice-crusted rim. Sky is a casing of our breath, suspending stars. The azimuth's violet arc sends snow gently and hurtles bright flashes like war cries through darkness. Lightning bugs zigzag above us, tiny phosphorescent lamps. Celestial palette, turquoise, cerulean, cobalt, azure. Among its luminaries, the sun walks the world's edge. A brilliant moon rises while bats leave caverns for air. Another home. What to say about Earth? Who loves lives like bright knives within us? Like us, it is alchemy, chromium, zinc, magnesium, copper. Like us, a fire swirls within. The stones, the trees, the waters speak. And if we are dust as Earth is, let it receive us into the embrace we barely left. Memory remembered, green as young bones. Oh, let the next world look just like this one. This is a prayer, its palms already curved around our dust. Lovers sing out from grasses they become, sing to us. Here, now, this ground, these mountains skirted in mist, this hallowed distance between worlds, where sage, sweet grass, and cedar burn, the smoke intertwined with your hair. We who have loved you grow as dark roots beneath your toes. We touch you here, now.
One of the things that was a really sad effect, too, for the people that left, their descendants didn't get to grow up among the culture that they had inherited. And so for those of us, and my family is one, that didn't remain in the Amherst area, we had to come back and reconnect and sometimes sort of validate ourselves, because even though our parents left to give us a better life, we didn't really want that kind of a separation. And so these are our relatives, but it didn't feel that they were all that close because we didn't know each other.
I can remember when Karen first came back to Amherst County, we didn't know her, and our people over time had became very weary of anybody coming in our midst. And even though they said they're one of us, we had been tricked and put down, the people coming in and talking, so supposedly your friends, and then they would write these horrible books about you, degrading you and the way you lived, and you know, what they didn't know they would make up. And, you know, so when new people came in, even if they claimed to be our own, if we didn't know them personally, we would watch them. And, you know, your action speaks louder than words. And Karen has done tremendous work for the tribe. And over time, I'm sure she'll tell you that sometimes I'm sure she felt like, well, I don't need this. And probably wanted to leave a lot of times. But over time, the people began to trust her and realize, hey, she is one of us. And our people are slow to change. And sometimes new people come in and want to do a whole lot real quick. And they find out very quickly that we won't say, hey, we don't want to do that. We just won't do it. I think all of us that stayed here, my grandmother told me a story one time about my grandfather during the Depression and time shortly thereafter. Work was hard to find, and he had some people living in Tennessee, and he went up there and he found a job, and he came back, and he told my grandmother, pack your bags, we're moving to Tennessee. And I said, well, what did you say? She said, well, I looked at him and told him, hey, I'll help him pack, but I'd been to Tennessee one time, I didn't like it, didn't leave anything there, and was nothing there for me. So if he wanted to move to Tennessee, I'd help him pack his bag. And, you know, it's people like her that stayed here, but they paid a terrible price for it. One of the stories that my grandmother told me is that one year they raised tobacco, and they couldn't sell their own tobacco. They had to get the landowner to take it to the market for them, and he would take the money and pay the bills. And whatever was left, that's what they would get. And the last year my grandfather raised tobacco, after everything was paid up, he had $1 left over. Mm. So it was, you know, a vicious cycle. My family was luckier than some. A Jewish man bought some of the land around here and started raising apples. My family basically lived on his property and raised apples. They lived in the houses. No running water, no indoor plumbing at all. But, you know, we had a place to live, and it was warm. It was a safe place. And, you know, we were dirt poor by anybody's standard. But one thing we always had, we had plenty of love, and they always provided food for us. So to us, we didn't want for anything, so we didn't even realize we were dirt poor until we started going into public schools. And then it really didn't bother a lot of us because, you know, we had clean clothes and we were loved at home.
This poem to me is about our people today and during the past 100 years, and it's called Returning. You never forget a white chapel perched by the roadside, the bulk of granite outcrop on which it sits like a hat. The red buds, yellowed now, the dogwood rusting, dignified as a matriarch, as fluted leaves begin to encircle it. The mountains against orange clouds to the west, a chimney steaming with the season's first drift of smoke, pale against the sky and sinuous as a woman undressed in someone's window. Across fields you hear the shriek of a hawk gliding over Bear Mountain, past spines of corn arcing back toward the earth, and smell a faint reek of apples shriveled together in the grass. The creek's bliss continues under the road, behind trees where a cabin settles into the ground. Can you genuinely claim these, and do they reclaim you? Dusty yards, red-rimmed eyes of men in overalls, women with stained hands, their faces resigned beyond the years, irreversibly. And are they your own? Their thin voices, brittle as their joints, shelves in their root cellars, lined with calloused potatoes and onion bulbs, apples in barrels, rows of home-canned provisions that gleam in jars, their cordwood stacked in readiness, quilts on their beds. The autumn glows around you, hilltops inflamed in the sun's last light. The land you never forget, rises, falls, and rises again, always. Yes, they reclaim you in a way you need not understand. In 1908, Arthur Gray came to Bear Mountain and established an Episcopal mission, which this poem refers to. And he also described the people as being a rich copper color, and said that they looked very much like Indians, and that's what they were. And that they called themselves Indian men and Indian women, and they didn't like to be called anything else.
We weren't allowed to attend public schools, and the church that the poem was written about, which was established in 1908, gave the Monacans a place they could go and remain who they were. We didn't have to watch what we were saying. We could be who we were. So, you know, that was a place we would go and we felt safe, and we didn't talk about the outside world and what was going on. We just went there, we had fun, and we were a family. Churches haven't always been good to Indian people, but in Virginia, it's a little bit different situation because they did step in once this law was written and gave us places we could go, be who we were, and we were able to obtain some education.
As Indian people, we are the only race of people that have to prove who we are. Working here at the museum, you know, I get it all the time. Well, what percentage are you, or are there any full bloods, you know, and for some reason or other, if you can't say yes to, you know, that you are 100% full blood, then that means you're no longer an Indian. At what point does a white man stop being white and a black man stop being black? You know, we're still on that percentage, that how much bloodline you got in you, to the point that people tend to say, well, you know, you ain't been full-blooded since before, you know, John Smith came, so therefore you no longer exist. And that's something that we need to get beyond. We didn't have a choice to whether what we were born as. The Creator decided we were Native American or Indian or whatever. We didn't choose that. And to say, okay, well, if you're not full-blooded, then, you know, you don't have any rights or whatever, is still so wrong, and it still goes on so badly today.
There's a lot of places where I'm asked to come and speak about my people, and I guess it's a given thing now that someone that is non-native would want to know, what do you want to be called? Do you want to be called Native American? Do you want to be called Indian? Do you want to be called First People? And I was just asked this the other day. I've got to the point now where I said, call me friend, and then let's talk about our ancestors.
A woman sits on a porch of weathered boards. Her skin, the color and texture of dried apple dolls that grandmothers gave to children years ago. When asked about the past, she will not speak. They were hard times. Maybe she sits on the parched earth instead, looks toward fields of rice, cotton, sugarcane, tobacco. Maybe she wears a printed house dress or sarong, with hair covered or plaited, her face etched in memories of joy, snatched from her in daylight and auctioned to strangers. Her hands have scrubbed cities of floors, washed the nameless dead, cooked food for armies, so little of it hers. Hands that failed to protect her or any of her children. She believes that if she speaks, she might break apart, the dust of her flying across stooped men, chained by their debt to the fields. She presses both lips together, an effort to hold her own grief in her own skin. Maybe evening wears into night. The stars that connect us gather like sisters around her. We hear they were hard times across the continuous land of our women, until a sun rises above droning flies and garrulous chickens, a voice speaks in our old language, which we do not know. We sift through a history with dust on our hands, the empty rocker creaking in the breeze.
Among our people, with the bombing of Pearl Harbor and our country went to war, the indigenous people of this land, as they always have among all Indian people throughout this entire, what we call United States today, felt that we were at one with the land. This was our land. It belonged to our ancestors. It was given to us by the Creator. And we would defend it to the death and keep it and hold it forever. So when it was threatened, we had a sense of honor to go and defend it. Some of our people, when they would go, and this was a story just related to me last week, two fellas, they were just hyped up, you know. They wanted to go and go to war, you know. They wanted to get back at the people that struck Pearl Harbor. And they were all hyped up, and they went up to Richmond. And before they went up to take their oath to join the Army, they said, well, let's go in and get a bite to eat before we go in. And they went into the restaurant, and the guy in there said, well, you can't eat in here. He said, didn't you see the sign on the window? And they said, what sign? And they walked out there, and it said, whites only. So here we were going to defend our land, but we couldn't eat in this restaurant because we were Indian people. And there are other cases, some of our people were arrested because they wouldn't get on the bus with the Negro people to be classified in that class. It's not that, you know, we didn't have anything against those people. It's just that we were our own people. We wanted to be who we were. We wanted you to identify us to who we were.
Yeah, and like Powhatan saying, we didn't have anything against the black people, but they were trying to classify us as black, and by associating with them in any amount of time, you know, they would say, oh, see there, we told you. So we basically avoided involvement with the blacks. In fact, working in the apple orchards, I remember one place where they had a place where the white people would sit and eat their lunch, and then another place where the Indians, and another place for the Negroes would sit and eat their lunch. Like I said, it was, you would become one by association with this racial integrity law, and that law was the law of the land until 1969, and it really hurt the Indian people here in Virginia. We became the invisible people.
We left behind the shriek of bright machinery gutting forests we knew. In our own land, in English, the word refugee, then exile, where they teach other countries how to make their people vanish. We see persecution in the shadow of trees as a woman's severed hands are folded into a little box and shipped to Washington for fingerprints. Or as some of us, burned, beaten, raped. There is nothing that has not been done. One night, over coffee, your eyes were night's ice, inflamed like collapsing stars, eyes in a photo of a man who disappeared. I whispered through the continent's purposeful silence, give me papers, a name. In Sao Paulo, Chiapas, Quebec, I become another woman's native face, searching for eyes she has loved, hair and skin she has loved. I send poems across a landscape, dark as Kentucky. Speak the name that was yours. Tuck your hand's memories into my coat, wet with continuous rain. On the trains, across borders of sculpted barbed wire, I hear the loud Americans who speak of human rights, how their government protects. I wonder where they live, where on earth their sanctuary is.
American Indians are the only people in this country that seem to have to stay stuck in the past. We are not allowed to adapt or acclimate to modern society. The general public expects us to show up with what they call it leather and feather outfits, as though we were still existing at the time of first contact. And we always say, you know, well, how come you don't have shoes on with big buckles on them? And how come you're not wearing white powdered wigs? People don't understand that everybody else is allowed to change over time, and Native people aren't. And I guess I would like to say, you can't change history with semantics. I mean, you can try, and it's been done many times, this business about we're going to call it discovery or exploration. We're not going to call it conquest or colonization or anything that suggests how evil it really was.
We're the first contact people, but yet we're not federal recognized by the government of this country. We just got back from England in late July of this year, and over there they still recognize us as sovereign people. And six of the Virginia tribes are applying for federal recognition through Congress. And I'm asking all people, wherever you are, to contact your congressman, your senator, and tell them vote for Virginia Indians in their battle for federal recognition. This is something that is long overdue, something that will open up doors for educational benefits for our young people, medical care for our elders, better housing, things that are out there for Native people, but we are not entitled to them because we don't have that piece of paper saying we're federal recognized.
It's so unfair. And when you look at the way our history has been told and characterized by people who didn't understand our cultures, who had no sense of what we were saying in our language, of course they got a lot of it wrong. But we're still welcoming people, and we're still saying, hey, we want to, you know, like Palatine said, we want to be called friend.
First to welcome, last to be recognized is a slogan that we say here in Virginia a great deal. One of the benefits would be return of our ancestral remains. Laws are passed to protect some of these things, but they pertain to federal recognized tribes. We're recognized by the state of Virginia, but not by the federal government. So once remains gets in the hands of the federal government, we are no longer able to retrieve those and rebury them. And we do ceremonies. We have been able to retrieve several sets of remains, and we bury them on our ancestry land, and we do the ceremonies that our people have been doing for thousands of years and show them the respect that they deserve. But without federal recognition, there are boxes of ancestry Virginia Indians sitting on shelves in places like the Smithsonian and other places that even their hands are tied. If they wanted to give them back to us, they are not allowed to, even by law. The educational part of it, our young people would be eligible for scholarships to go to college, something that, because of the laws passed here in this part of the country, our people haven't been able to do. The federal recognition would open up these doors. Also, health care for our elders. There's so many benefits that we could tap into if we were federal recognized, and it's something that we hope to obtain in the next year or two.
You know, we're still trying to come to the table with an open attitude and say, let's not just talk about how terrible it's all been, but let's talk about what we can do together to make this a better world. Because admittedly, with all the progress that people have made and all the technical knowledge, we have not improved the environment since 1607. We've screwed it up completely. Maybe Native people have something to offer, and maybe those thousands of years of indigenous wisdom taught them not only how to get along, but how to take care of their world, and we ought to be paying attention.
Flying west, over the plain of my relatives' homes, my bones turn with knowings no one told me. I can hear our songs buried under dry riverbeds. Past petroglyphs on mesas where the plane touches down and the Rio Grande bends itself to flow through the city where a southeastern woman, Cherokee or Creek, trips over heavy ground and falls, face down drunk, and tilts her head back to the days of half-being. We meet with our eyes, the flicker blood demands, and remember a journey of footprints dragged west across the Appalachian snow. How we walk backward with faces turned home, west across the river where plains give themselves to new mountains, and a place speaks to us, and I say, I have seen rivers rage over dams to flood across the land that could not help itself. It cannot help us, sister. But we could rise too, to know the true circle of voices that call to us over this ground. Open-mouthed in the snow, voices of mothers and fathers who ask us to hear the earth singing. If you would like to hear more programming about this, email airos@unl.edu. If you would like to learn more about the history of the Virginia Indians and their bid for federal recognition, go to airos.org. Click more about this program to find additional links, lesson plans, and much more. This program was produced in the WHRV studios in Norfolk, Virginia, by producer Kimberly Lyman and with the assistance of producer Michelle Harrell. Editing and sound design by Chief Audio Engineer Al Sykes with the assistance of engineer Perry Smith. Lauren Mansfield graciously transcribed the program.